The headlines: Iran says it has developed a highly maneuverable hypersonic missile that can penetrate the most advanced air defense systems. Russia says it has begun withdrawing its troops from Kherson one day after announcing a pullback from the west bank of the Dnieper River. Plus, millions of commuters in Paris and in London are facing travel chaos as striking workers bring subway services to a halt. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is the news. Thanks for joining us. Iran says it has developed a hypersonic missile with the power to counter highly advanced defense systems.
We have developed an advanced hypersonic missile which is capable of penetrating air defense shields. This missile system has a high speed and extreme maneuverability and can operate both within and above the Earth's atmosphere.
The general also admitted that the system represents a generational leap in the field of missiles. The commander said the new hypersonic missile will maintain its competitive advantage and technological edge for the decades to come. Iranian military experts have in recent years made substantial headway in manufacturing a broad range of indigenous equipment, attaining self-sufficiency in the arms sphere. Iranian officials have repeatedly said the country will continue to strengthen its military capabilities, including its missile power, which are entirely meant for defense. Iran's new version of indigenously made missile defense system, Bobar 373, is capable of hitting targets just 5 minutes after fire. As Salman Khoury reports, the missile system has made Iran among only 5 countries in the world with such a highly sophisticated technology.
Iran has recently unveiled the newest version of its homegrown missile defense system, Bavar 373, which is said to have taken one step closer to the Russian-made S-400 anti-aircraft weapon system. During the test fire, a stationary target was detected at a range of more than 450 kilometers by the optimized radar of the missile system and was tracked at a range of about 405 kilometers and was hit at a range of more than 300 kilometers. The long-range missile has solid fuel and was evaluated during operation for the first time. The detection radar range of the Bavar 373 system has increased from 350 to 450 kilometers, and its engagement radar range has increased from 260 to 400 kilometers. The Bavar 373 long-range air defense system is capable of detecting up to 100 targets, tracking 60 of them and engaging with 6 concurrently.
All air defense systems are divided into 3 main categories based on their missions and operations, including long-range, middle-range, and short-range systems. Bavar 373 is a long-range missile system. Only 4 or 5 countries in the world have the technology to manufacture such a strategically important missile system. These countries do not even allow other countries to master such a technology, and if they provide any country with such a missile system, they will operate and overhaul the systems themselves, and operational and communicational codes are not given to the using country.
A distinguishing feature of Bavar 373 is its vertical launching system with square launchers, mostly used for air defense on warships. The system's missile range has increased from 200 to 300 kilometers, and its engagement altitude has increased from 27 to 32 kilometers.
The great achievement which has been made as a result of the production of Bavar 373, aside from its defensive goals, is that this project has institutionalized the path of developing anti-aircraft air defense system inside the country. It means that we're now highly capable of producing any form of anti-air defense system inside the country with the help of our own universities, startup companies, and Iranian youth and specialists. By using Bavar 373 missile system, we can counter different types of missiles, bombers, and ballistic missiles.
The Bavar air defense system employs 3 different types of missiles to hit targets at various altitudes. It's been able to hit targets just 5 minutes after fire at an altitude of 43,000 feet.
Iran maintains that its military might poses no threat to regional countries, stressing that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence. Salman Khoury, Tehran.
The Russian army says it has begun pulling its forces back from Ukraine's southern city of Kherson, which Moscow has had under control since the early days of the war.
The units of the Russian troops are maneuvering to prepared positions on the left bank of the Dnipro River in strict accordance with the approved plan.
Russia announced its decision to withdraw its forces from the west bank of the Dnipro River on Wednesday. Moscow says the move is aimed at saving the lives of Russian soldiers and their fighting capacity. Ukraine claims that its forces have recaptured 12 towns and villages in the strategic region of Kherson since Wednesday. Kiev also says it has reclaimed the southern town of Snihurivka, the last remaining Russian-held town in the Mykolaiv region. Meanwhile, the NATO chief says the Western military alliance will support Ukraine for as long as it takes. Stoltenberg says the, quote, unprecedented support is vital for the Ukrainian progress on the battleground. Commuters in Paris are facing travel chaos as metro workers go on a strike to demand higher pay and job security. Transport officials in the French capital say that nearly every metro line will be shut down or operating with only limited rush hour service. Union leaders are hoping to step up pressure on the government to reconsider the revival of a controversial pensions overhaul that would push back the retirement age by 3 years. Also, workers across several sectors in recent weeks have staged strikes seeking pay hikes or increased hiring. Similarly, other parts of Europe are seeing workers halt work to show their anger at soaring prices. Well, not only in Paris, but also in London, railway workers are demonstrating their discontent with their pay and working conditions. They've staged another large-scale industrial action. A strike by the London Underground staff is paralyzing public transport and stranding millions of travelers. A correspondent in the British capital, Saeed Pourreza, joined us earlier to tell us more about the strike.
The government, of course, has been saying that the unions, the railway workers, will have to get used to modernized practices, and they want more incorporation of Sundays, for example, into the working week. On the other hand, the unions are saying, look, they don't have any problems with modernization, but what they want is to protect those 600 jobs that might be lost to modernization, and that the government will have to find ways to come up with the money that they're asking in terms of pay rises that they haven't received in a very long time, citing examples of how train company bosses, executives, are making away with millions, if not billions, over the past few years. And of course, passenger levels are still at pre-pandemic levels. Revenue is not as much as used to be. That's the claim by the government. The unions tend to disagree with that. But this is more than just the railway industry, Bardia. Across the different sectors, strikes have either been held or are planned to be held over the coming months. The most recent one that we heard about was a vote by nurses to go on strike for the first time in more than a century. That, of course, is yet to be determined. The exact date, we're not aware of it just yet, but that is going to happen. And unless there is a breakthrough in these negotiations between the unions and the government, we're going to see more of similar actions taking place, industrial campaign to go on. And that's the promise that the unions have given, that they will continue with their industrial campaign as long as it takes until they get what they are demanding.
France says that it will allow a rescue ship transporting over 200 migrants to dock at its southern coast. The French government harshly criticized Italy for failing to take in the migrants. Interior Minister Gerard Darmanin denounced Italy's ban on the boat as, quote, incomprehensible and selfish. He said that France would make up for this unacceptable behavior. The French minister said that Italy's approach will lead to extremely strong consequences on bilateral relations. Darmanin said that France has suspended a plan to relocate 3,500 migrants currently in Italy in protest against Rome's refusal to take in the ship. This is the latest European standoff over where to disembark migrants, picked up after trying to reach Europe from North Africa. Italy has been increasingly frustrated with taking in the bulk of those rescued. Rome says other states, including France, must do more. The senior Bahraini cleric is doubling down on his call for a boycott of parliamentary and municipal elections. In a tweet, Shia leader Ayatollah Sheikh Isa Ahmad Qassem said the elections will kill democracy in Bahrain. He lashed out at those who claim the vote is aimed at reinforcing democracy. The top religious figure reiterated that the elections are actually meant to destroy democracy, as they are off-limits to those who are really seeking democracy. He noted that Bahrain's elections are in fact geared to promote dictatorship, and that people are only pawns for the regime to dominate. The elections are scheduled for the 12th of November. Yemen's Ansarullah fighters and allied army units have thwarted yet another attempt by the Saudi-led coalition to steal oil from the country's energy-rich province of Shabwa. They've staged an operation against an oil ship in the port of Kenya. We earlier talked to our correspondent in Sana'a, Yusuf Nauri, to hear it all.
Well, this is a port that's actually stationed in an area under the control of the Saudi-led coalition. And since 2015, since the war started, the Saudi-led coalition and the sponsoring states have basically been looting Yemeni oil and Yemeni gas from this province illegally. This is the province of Shabwa. And we're talking about millions, if not billions, of dollars under the supervision of the United Nations. However, until recently, as recent as last month, the Yemen Salvation Government is basically saying enough is enough. They're going to take matters into their own hand and protect Yemen's natural resources. And this is actually the second thwarted attempt by the Saudi-led coalition and their contractors to steal Yemeni oil from oil-rich provinces in Yemen. And this was another warning message sent by Yemen's armed forces, which basically sent and launched another drone strike near the in the proximity of the port to send a message to this illegal oil ship that if they don't turn back, they're going to be targeted. And fortunately for this crew, they got the message. They turned back empty-handed.
A number of Palestinian rights groups have slammed Israel for its decision to outlaw them as terrorist organizations, followed by closure orders and raids on their offices. The head of one of the rights bodies told UN investigators that the regime's move was like an execution designed to stop them from probing abuses. Israel has for decades been documented killing and maiming journalists. Shirin Abu Akhla is the latest in a long list of Palestinian reporters killed by Israeli forces. Israeli authorities have led an unprecedented crackdown on journalists attempting to cover the regime's crimes against Palestinians.
A United Nations Independent Commission of Inquiry has begun public hearings on the human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territories. Israel has harshly criticized the hearings while refusing to cooperate with the team. One of the subjects of the rare public hearings is Tel Aviv's designation of six Palestinian rights groups as terrorist organizations, followed by closure orders and raids on their offices last year. The move targeted such NGOs as Adamir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, the Legal Aid Human Rights Group Al-Haq, Defense for Children International Palestine, Union of Agricultural Work Committees, Bissan Center for Research and Development, and the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees. The heads of three of the rights bodies took to the floor saying Israel had justified the move with a secret file and had provided no real evidence against them. The head of Al-Haq Rights Group told the UN investigators that Tel Aviv's designation of Palestinian civil society groups as terrorist bodies was like an execution designed to stop them from probing abuses by Israel. This could be referring to Israel's long-time exception from accountability before the UN and other international organizations, despite the regime's deadly atrocities against Palestinians. The head of Al-Haq Rights Group also described the designation and subsequent closure of NGOs as an arbitrary decision, saying Israeli forces had used mafia methods against them. Meanwhile, director of Ad-Damir Prisoner Advocacy Group said a systematic attack against the human rights defenders is ongoing by Israel. The hearings, which have been harshly criticized by Israel, will also address the killing of Al Jazeera journalist Shirin Abu Akleh, who was shot in the head by Israeli forces while on assignment in the occupied West Bank in May.
The non-stop years-long use of pellet weapons to quell anti-India protests in India-administered Kashmir is taking its toll on the victims, especially those who were hit in the eyes. Our correspondent Shana Butt reports.
A recent study published in the Indian Journal of Ophthalmology reveals that a large number of those who sustained eye injuries due to the use of pellet guns in the mainstay of Srinagar between July and November 2016 have suffered some degree of vision loss. The survey conducted on 777 eye operations during the period reveals 80% of the victims have vision limited to counting fingers. 35-year-old Arshid Ahmed, a student of arts, was hit by pellets in both eyes in October 2016. 6 years on, Arshid says his vision of higher studies diminished just like his eyesight. Arshid's family was more fearful than hesitant to talk, and convincing Arshid to speak about his condition was no less than a Herculean task. Before the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in 2019, New Delhi used shotguns for almost a decade to quell anti-India demonstrations in Indian-administered Kashmir, resulting in thousands of pellet injuries and the epidemic of vision loss in the region. Following the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, people here might be upset about many things changing in the region. However, a remarkable achievement for government forces is that not even a single pellet gun has been used in the region following a tough crackdown on protesters. India regards Kashmir as an integral part of its territory. Meanwhile, analysts say since the abrogation of Kashmir's special status, New Delhi seems to own everything in Kashmir except the problems of its people. Shahana Butt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Analysis of recent events in Iran. In this program, we look at women's status within the Islamic Republic of Iran and emphasize the social life of women in the Islamic Republic. We also take a look at Islam's viewpoints about women. Please stay with us. Islam defends women's rights more than other religions. In fact, the prophets and messengers of God, peace be upon them, have always talked about life and freedom. Life and freedom can be thought of as their slogan. The Almighty says in Ayah 24 of Surah Anfal in the Holy Quran, O believers, respond to Allah and His Messenger when He calls you to that which gives you life. And know that Allah stands between a person and their heart, and that to Him you will all be gathered. The Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, used to live in a society which lacked any sort of humanitarian, ethical, and moral values. This is why pre-Islamic Arabs are referred to as Jahiliya Arabs. They did not value women, and they even denied women their right to life. In those days in Arabia, it was customary to bury alive newly born female infants. With the emergence of Islam, though, this custom was totally uprooted, and Islam fought this superstition and others like it in all of its manifestations. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was the most staunch supporter of women's rights, and Islam enshrined the most fundamental and the most important right of women, the right to live a full life. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, used to treat his daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, with such great respect and care that everybody was surprised and took note of this. He always used to kiss her hand, and when returning from a journey, the first person he went to see was Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. Similarly, when Prophet Muhammad was about to embark on a journey, the last house he always visited to bid farewell was that of his daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her. There are many hadiths or narrations from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, in which the Holy Prophet calls upon everyone to treat women with respect, with dignity and decency. The Holy Prophet used to say, "The best men of my ummah are those who are most kind to their family members and those who are not condescending or coarse and harsh towards their family." Other hadiths or narrations relating to Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, include the following. "The best of you is he who is best to his wife. Always act kindly towards women. Paradise lies under the feet of the mother." The Holy Prophet, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was asked once, "Whose right was the greatest on man?" The Holy Prophet replied, "His mother's." Modern Western civilization is based upon money and material gain. In Western society, money and wealth are everything. People are allowed to do whatever they like as long as they don't break the laws of the land. Immoral and unethical behavior is allowed so long as no laws are broken. This is a shame, of course, since Islam does not accept immoral and unethical behavior. In fact, Islamic teachings are based on monotheism, morality and ethics, and Islam sets out clear boundaries for freedom, emphasizing that freedom and responsibility go hand in hand. Islam, of course, always emphasizes the importance of human dignity and human honor. False Western slogans of supporting Iranian women's rights is really a pointer to the fact that Westerners are angry and frustrated with Iranian women, who have delivered a severe blow to Western civilization, exposing the fact that Western women are exploited and abused in Western societies. Frustrated by the fact that they are unable to take on the Islamic Republic militarily, the terrorist United States and Israeli regimes have now resorted to a vicious media campaign against Iran, using the pretext of women's rights. No doubt the Iranian nation will emerge triumphant once more from this challenge, successfully overcoming and defeating the hybrid war which is now being waged by the West against Islamic Iran. The duplicitous and deceitful Westerners have falsely claimed that Islam denigrates women and does not value women. They claim that men and women are not equal within Islam. However, the Lord Most High says in Ayah 1 of Surah Nisa in the Holy Quran, "O humanity, be mindful of your Lord, who created you from a single soul, and from it he created its mate. And through both he spread countless men and women. And be mindful of Allah, in whose name you appeal to one another, and honor family ties. Surely Allah is ever watchful over you." According to Islamic teachings, men and women have been created from a single soul. The duties and responsibilities that have been given to them are equal. For example, with regards to daily prayers, with regards to the Hajj pilgrimage, fasting during the holy month of Ramadan, and social responsibilities such as enjoining good and refraining from that which has been prohibited. Both men and women have equal duties and equal responsibilities. According to Islamic teachings, there is no difference between men and women, and both have been endowed with intelligence and human dignity. According to Islam, men and women complement one another and they complete each other. Both men and women can help each other grow and evolve. Both of them are central planks of society and central planks of the family. The Holy Quran teaches us that the value of each human being, both men and women, lies in their piety and abstinence from wrong and sinful behavior. According to the Holy Quran, men and women who are more pious are closer to God and more valued by God. Today, Iranian women are active in all fields of science, technology, economy, business and society, and have excelled in all of these fields.
Hidden Files.
When you're limited from employment, education, participating in the society, and seen as a second-class citizen in every way, what do you do? Imagine you're part of the majority in your own country, and yet you're prohibited from being employed in top positions. What if you can't get accepted into the university despite being a top student? You're not allowed to serve in most political offices. And on top of this, you're not allowed to vocalize your oppression. And those who have are either in prison or have fled the country or have been killed. Welcome to Bahrain, the country where the demographics are being changed to oppress the Shia majority. A country where if you talk about the ruling family, you could lose your own citizenship, even though you are from this land. Hello, I'm Marzia Hashimi, and this is Hidden Files. Today we will take a look at Bahrain, a country which is boiling over with oppression. While the king wants to show the world that the country is modern and democratic, and by the way, he's throwing an election to prove his point. Stay with me as we take a look at the tiny but important Persian Gulf nation of Bahrain. Since the brutal crackdown in 2011, the regime has kept a very heavy-handed grip on this island nation. The oppression is in all sectors of the society. There's a special permit that people must have in order to really function in the society, meaning for jobs, schools, organizations, even bank accounts, etc. Those who participated in the demonstrations are not given these certificates or permits for them to get employment. There is no independent media allowed, and independent human rights organizations have been banned. And those who have tried to report on the human rights situation in Bahrain are in jail. They include Abdulhadi Al-Khawaja, founder of the Bahrain Center for Human Rights, and others who are serving life sentences. Well, in the midst of this crackdown, King Hamad bin Isa Al-Khalifa wants to represent the country as being progressive. He's holding elections to select 40 members of the Council of Representatives to be held on November 12th. What he fails to mention is that many former parliamentarians are currently in jail or in exile,
and have had their citizenship taken away by the king, and that the majority of Bahrainis boycott elections, which they say are not representative and just a farce to have a pretense of democracy and a facade to cover the complete oppression of a nation. Well, let me welcome our first guest to help us take a closer look at just what is taking place in Bahrain.
Dr. Ibrahim El-Aradi graduated from medical school in 2005 and returned to work in Bahrain. He treated many injured people during the revolt. He had to leave Bahrain in April 2011. He has worked in Europe and Lebanon as a doctor and is currently in England. He is the director of the Political Bureau of the February 14 Coalition.
Thanks so much for joining us here at Hidden Files, Dr. Ibrahim El-Aradi. Well, let's start off with, what is life really like in Bahrain today?
Bahrain cannot say your idea. You cannot say anything for the life, for example. You cannot criticize the government. You cannot say no for the regime. You have to stay just poor. Even your religions, prayers, Aza, anything, Ashura, Al Khalifa, everything of every time, every day, every seasons. So they doesn't want Shia, especially Shia, to have such level like any level at the government or the country. They bring a new people in Bahrain. They give them our nationality, and they talk from us the citizenships. So nobody allowed to speak normally in Bahrain, like to say what is in his mind. We are not allowed to criticize anything in the country. Al Khalifa wants us just to live like, sorry to say that, even worse than animals in Bahrain. So there's no freedom in Bahrain. We have one of the worst dictator regimes in the world in Bahrain. And the head of these regimes is Hamad Al Khalifa, who destroyed more than 35 mosques in Bahrain.
Well, why has the regime been revoking the citizenship of some that you just talked about while giving citizenship to foreigners?
To change the demographic of Bahrain, because more than 80% of population Bahrain, they are Muslim Shia. So they want to change. This the plan was from 25 years to change this demographic in order to make Shia Bahrain minority.
Well, the latest revolt started back in 2010, but still hasn't been successful. What is hindering its success?
Bahrainese people, they are victims of Al Khalifa regime. We are victims. So we are under pressure for decades. And Al Khalifa, they want from us just to not do anything in their life. So the aim that that Al Khalifa, they saw that every 10 years there is a demonstration in Bahrain, every 10 years, 10 or 15 years. But the demonstration in February 2011 was the major, because Sunni and Shia were involved in the demonstration against this regime. Okay, some they want a new government, and other they want the regime to fall down. So they are their idea. But all of us will agree as Bahraini, Sunni and Shia, that regime is against the future of Bahrain. So about the normalization, and we are right now. All the world discovered that we are right now, because Al Khalifa, they go to the normalization with Israel, which we doesn't want. They make like fake elections, or which is not presented Bahrainis real. So all the parties in Bahrain, all the powers, for instance, Sheikh Ali Salman, Mohammed Abdul Wahab, Ustad Hassan Mshami, all the and the jail. By the way, today is the birthday of Sheikh Ali Salman, 57 years old, which he sentenced for 35 years. So those issues, make Al Khalifa worry that maybe the Shia in one day maybe they will have the power. I remember that, and I was kids in that time in 1985, which some people in Bahrain, some soldiers Shia Al Khalifa, they kicked them out and they put them in the jail because they say like we have like contact with Iran, with revolution in Iran. So all the problems, Al-Khalifa, they say if it is from Iran. But actually, if you see the situation in Bahrain, people are poor. They see our villages, our cities really are poor. Even the common economic of countries grow, but all those money, if I call it the public treasury, it's just that the money spent for Hamad and his son, Prime Minister, and other sons, and just the family.
Well, you just talked about Parliament, and we know that there are elections coming up this month. What is your assessment of these elections?
Yeah, there is now a popular boycott for this election. We are showing that we want a new constitution, like real constitution, like legal constitution, which represents the original Bahrainese people, not that one which was written by Hamad's arm only, which is against the people. So about that election, regime used this election just for view to international propaganda for the international community. See, especially for people and for the government in London and the United States. See, Bahrain is a democratic country. There is election, free election. And at the same time, doesn't allow that regime people from UN anyway to visit the prison in Bahrain, the prisoner, to see the situation. Just Al Khalifa used that media because we don't have all the media in Bahrain is Al Khalifa by it, is under Al Khalifa influence. Just so for that that election is not legal. Because if you will say the leaders, which are the president, which they are the president in the jail in Bahrain, so they are presented the majority of Bahrain. And Hamad, he knows that.
Well, what does it mean for you when the regime has taken away your citizenship?
You know, of course, it's unfair. I am a medical doctor. I work as a doctor in Bahrain. I just spoke. I saw the injuries, the dead people, murders from my eyes at the ground. I rescued many injuries. So Al Khalifa, they want to punish me. Actually, I was in Lebanon that time. I saw on Al Arabiya TV breaking news that Al Khalifa took citizenship from me, from myself, and my others, the Bahrainis. So it is not easy. But, you know, the connect between me and Bahrain, not just this red passport, this route. Al Khalifa, they are not Bahrainis. They invade Bahrain 2 centuries or 200 years. It is not easy, but in the same time, you know that I am Bahrainis. My father is Bahraini. Grandfather are Bahrainis. So if you took from my citizenship, it's not me that I'm not Bahraini. So he treating us now just like this. If you say, if I don't like your idea, I will take your citizenship. More than 500 or 600 people without this citizenship. But practically, there is thousands of people because you go to the airport, you want to go to Al Arba'in, to Iraq, you are not allowed. You want to visit Imam Rida in Iran, you are not allowed. There is Geneva conference or for human rights, you are not allowed to go there. So practically people without citizenship. So that is situations, I hope that I ask any time that regime, the media, give me one reason why you took from me my citizenship. I will agree with you. One reason. Okay, I'm not criminal. I am just doctor in politics. Did you take my citizenship because I'm a doctor? I rescue people in Bahrain. So that's the situation for the other. And see now, our kids, they're stateless. There's a new generation without citizenship. And this is that view The world knows that view, but the problem that Al Khalifa are continue to do these things. Just they want to see that. See, you demonstrate in 2011, you're not allowed to be Bahraini. That's the message from Al Khalifa. They want us to be like Abid, like just to say, oh, what he wants. But actually, that steps won't help him, you know, because people of Bahrain, generation after generation, they are more aggressive against this regime.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Very sad situation in Bahrain. Thank you so much for being with us here, Dr. Al-Aradi. It is interesting how King Hamad has tried to get various international entities on board with his modernization disguise. Even the Pope will be visiting Bahrain in November. He and others have been invited by the Bahraini royal family to participate in a conference themed Bahrain Forum for Dialogue, East and West for Human Coexistence. Well, many Bahrainis find the theme slightly ironic when they feel that the government does not want its own people to peacefully coexist and thrive. Bahraini prisoners, as well as some of those in exile, have written letters to Pope Francis and informing him that Hamad simply wants to put on a show for the world that everything is fine in Bahrain and that he believes in inclusivity, when that is the farthest thing from reality in Bahrain today. Here's an excerpt from the prisoner's letter to the Pope.
Bahrain's prisoner's letter to the Pope. Your Holiness, Pope Francis, we speak to you on behalf of more than 4,000 political prisoners from the people of this island, imprisoned throughout the years since the events of the 2011 Arab Spring. Some of them served their sentences and were released without redress. Some died without compensation. Some were killed without any investigation. Some are awaiting execution without any intercession, while others will never be freed, sentenced to life, after being handed down ridiculously long prison terms. Abdul Rauf Al-Shaib. Dr. Abdul Rauf Al-Shaib has been a human rights defender for more than 40 years. In 2006, Al-Shaib founded Bahrain Salvation Movement, Harakat Khalas. He's currently the head of the National Committee for Martyrs and Victims of Torture in Bahrain. Stripped of his citizenship, Al-Shaib has been sentenced to death. He's also been sentenced to prison in absentia for more than 130 years.
Well, thanks so much for being with me. We're happy to have with us here in the studio Dr. Abdul Rauf Al-Shaib. I'm so happy you being with us. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Let's start from there.
Yeah. When I was still young, between 14 to 15 years old, I start feeling that there is a discrimination in Bahrain against majority of people there, which is Shia. And also by the revolution of Iran, we start having some idea that there is a political religion where we can use a religion to apply a government or to have an Islamic rule. So that's why we start having that knowledge and we start doing some practice and activity, pushing people for Islam back to go to Islam. From that years, I have been in prison with the government only because we were supporting Islamic ideology and idea about the government. So they put me for 5 years in jail. Again, after that, also again for 5 years, until means I have spent between Saudi Arabia imprisonment and Bahrain imprisonment and UK as well imprisonment for more than 18 years.
Oh my God!
Only for my activities defending human rights means.
So you said that okay. So Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, doing human rights activities, you're in prison. But what happened in UK? Why were you in prison there too?
The same things means I feel that there is some pressure on UK government from Saudi Arabia and from Bahrain because of my activity. So they fabricate for me a case about a media that there is some information in your laptop that can support who were planning to attend a terrorism act, which is all fake, all means the judgment about your heart, about your soul, that you might have that plan in the future. So we have put you in prison for that.
Tell me your perspective right now. What is life like for the Bahraini people today?
I feel since Al Khalifa, they came on stage to rule Bahrain, it's still the same, but it goes worse and worse by the time. Means, let's say, the father of this king in Bahrain right now was a little bit better than him, and his grandfather better than his father. So the more we are going for the generation down, the more they get worse. It means they become more dictatorship. They become more oppression against and aggressive against our nation there in Bahrain. So there is a very wide discrimination against the people in Bahrain. They use them like slaves. And that's why we don't have our right. That's why we stand to ask people's support, that we have to get our independence from this government and to rule ourselves by the means constitution we have.
We have seen recently the situation with the Bahraini government establishing ties with the Israeli regime. I want to talk about that and the effect on the Bahraini people. Do the majority of Bahrainis support this move, or how do you see this?
Absolutely not. Means the majority of Bahrainian people, whether they are Sunni or Shia, nobody supporting the government for normalization with Zionist regime. Everybody hates this regime because it's come as like a cancer in our Islamic body. So we have to get rid of the Zionist regime. But the government, although they say that we have an election, although they say we have a parliament, without asking the parliament, without having their their opinion, they are only a toys there. They put them. Nobody can even talk about Israel or about Zionists.
You just talked about the parliament, and we know that the regime has the elections coming up on November the 12th. What's your perspective about these elections?
You know, the election process itself, it doesn't give any sign or any meaning that if you have election means you have a democracy process of procedure. No. Even if we will see Hitler itself, who is bloody shit, he have that time also elections. Saddam Hussein, he was having some elections. Many of countries, a dictatorship country, who they imprisoned their people, they use election. But
so you're saying the elections are not real?
It's fake. It's fake, exactly. It's not real election. Means there is many aspect that we can prove that this election doesn't represent a vote of Bahrainian people. That's why they came with that election. They use it as a makeup. The election, they use it as a makeup to beauty the ugly face of this dictatorship government.
Your final words. We know that there's an international conference that King Hamad is sponsoring that's coming up in November, and even the Pope is supposed to be there and other people. What would be your message to those individuals going to Bahrain for this conference?
First, my message for the Pope itself, because he is the top of this group who's coming in Bahrain, and he should know that by his visit to Bahrain, he is, if he mean or he doesn't mean, he is going to support this dictatorship government against his nation. And that's not the message of the Catholic Vatican. It's not the message. They are they said that we are following the Christian and we are following Jesus. Jesus will not agree to be against one person in this world. How about nation or how about a country full of people? So that will not be acceptable. He is representing today the Pope. He is representing Jesus. And we don't believe that if Jesus was in this world, will visit Bahrain by even the call of his ruling government.
Right. Well, I would love to continue talking to you, but we're out of time. I appreciate you so much for being with us here on Hidden Files.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Stay with us. I'll be right back with more of the show. As there are growing calls from Bahrainis for external pressure to be applied on the regime, the Al Khalifa family continue to work towards trying to show that everything is normal inside of the country. The regime's Western allies seem to continue to turn a blind eye to the oppression that is taking place. This is despite the United States having its fifth fleet stationed in Bahrain. So the Americans are quite aware of what is happening on the island nation. And of course, with both the United States and the United Kingdom, what we have seen is continued support for the regime and increased weapon sales to facilitate Hamad and company with its iron fist policy. And then there's Israel, and that the regime has normalized ties with the Israelis, despite the majority of Bahrainis being against the normalization of ties. Now, there's Saudi Arabia, which continues to support the regime and wants to help it change the demography of the small island nation so that the voices that may still be heard may become even more stifled. Well, perhaps participants in the upcoming conference being held in Bahrain, according to some in exile, to whitewash reality on the ground, can serve as a forum for those who really want the truth to demand accountability. How about a visit with political prisoners to see their overall conditions? How about demanding that before Hamad reaches out to the East and West, he reaches out to his own people and allow them to have fair representation and participation in the society? How about releasing political prisoners? How about reinstating the citizenship of so many people? How about letting the Bahraini people breathe? One person, one vote, and then watch how Bahrain could flourish if the people were given a chance to choose its own course. Well, we're hoping that eventually that will be the case, and we're keeping our eyes on Bahrain, and we're bringing you all the latest on this continued demand to end the oppression in this country. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of Hidden Files. Make sure you join us next week and see where our files will take us to. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.